Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome in, my friends, to the show that definitely ends at 10 a.m., as a matter of fact, is when it ends.
If you're a kid and you're up this early, you're probably pretty angry right now. I'm just saying.
I mean, what time does school start around here?
Like 8-ish, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
My high school started at 7 a.m., you were in a chair. Actually, I was not in a chair. I had first period basketball all 4 years. One of our classes could be one of your sports, and first period was basketball for me. That actually made it worse. It sounds awesome. Sounds awesome.
Because then you're sore and sweaty all day unless you shower.
Don't care about that. I didn't mind. I would shower after practice. We had 50-minute classes, 55-minute classes, then 5 minutes between. And so coach would run a 45 to 50 minute practice, and then you had 5 to 10 minutes to get ready for second period. And I didn't mind showering. All right, whatever. I'm sweaty. I'm not trying to go in there and chat up Ashley Powell in second period when I was covered in sweat. All right, I didn't mind taking a quick shower before we had to roll up into second period. That wasn't the problem. The problem, great one, was that practice started at 7 a.m., as in you are on the floor with the sneaks laced and that classic traditional cheap mesh basketball practice jersey and shorts on. You were on the floor ready to sprint at 7 a.m. Not on the floor dressed, but like rubbing your eyes and yawning. Not on the floor at 7 a.m. ready to No. 7 a.m., you're on the baseline. We're running a suicide to get practice started every day. That was Mark Tease's idea of a wonderful start to the day. Hit a suicide at 7 a.m. when the bell hit. Ring, 7 a.m. Somewhere else in the school, you knew your friend was starting their trigonometry class. The seniors, not us, not the basketball seniors, but the seniors, they had first period homeroom. That was designed to give you as a senior the opportunity to get your bleep straight for the day, right? Get all your AP homework finished up and put the finishing touches on that book report or whatever. And what ended up happening was that those guys didn't have to come to school until 7:50 a.m. They got that extra almost hour. Not on the basketball team. Not if you're a basketball player. You are on the floor 7 a.m. running to suicide, ready to go. I didn't even mind that, except for I had to be in the gym at like 6:15 a.m. to get ready to start practice at 7 o'clock. Miserable existence. Did that for 4 years. Yeah. Miserable.
Hours, I believe, because it was a really long time for me. I think it was like 7:30 for us. And senior year, I just kind of slept with my eyes open through physics class. And then I had ninth period as my study hall. So that was much better because, yeah, we had nine classes. So I had ninth period off. So for football or whatever, I could go in, take my time getting ready for practice and, you know, just lounge around and get ready.
I did ask Mark Tisa one time. I said, Coach, why is basketball class, and don't get me wrong, in retrospect, pretty great that one of your classes you got to burn out of the seven you had to go to every given day. One of the classes I got to burn was just go play basketball, which is great.
Did you get less than an A in that class?
If you were in that class, you were on the team. This wasn't like an open to everybody. If you were on the basketball team, you had first period basketball. If you weren't on the basketball team, basketball was not an elective you could take. And so I asked Tease at one point, hey, why is this first period? Why don't you make this the last practice, like the last period, right? Make basketball a seventh period class, and then we can just roll into practice, right? Nope.
No, because you get two practices in.
No, it wasn't even that.
Oh, okay. Well, to me,
And that would make sense. That would be a logical thought, right? Okay, you get practice, then you get all day to think about what you learned at practice, then you come back in the afternoon and you get to execute what
doesn't
you learned
sound,
in first period.
Doesn't sound legal, but...
Anyway. Very legal. Yeah, very well, legal.
There are limited practices for...
wasn't practice. This was class. Yeah. That's why it was legal. Okay. All right? So I asked him about it, and his response was... Because if you're going to be on this team, I want you to be someone that I know I can trust to show up and be ready to work regardless of time or place. I want kids on this squad who are going to show up ready to work and to do the right thing, whether it's 7 in the morning or 7 at night for game day. That's what I want. And I will give him credit for this, regardless of how you felt about it. If you missed a 7 a.m. practice, if you missed basketball class, or if you were late to basketball class without a good excuse, verifiable excuse, unless you were a 5-star draft pick, unless you were a 5-star recruit, you were suspended for the next game, or at least half of it. Like, I don't remember exactly the rules. Like, if you're late, it's half, and if you miss 7 a.m. practice, you don't play next time out. And keep in mind, you had like 2 basketball games a week. So if you missed Monday through Friday, and there was a Friday game, you missed one day that week, you were out for that game, or at least half of it. I respected that. And the reason I'm telling you this, aside from the fact that Lonzo triggered a core high school memory for some reason, the reason I bring this up is because I want to talk about discipline in the world of sports today. And the platform for this conversation is going to be the Chicago Bears. And it's going to be the Alabama Crimson Tide. Those are the two teams that I want to use as illustrations. And there will be other teams that end up in the mix of this conversation. But the reason that I say that is we have all been, and I think rightfully so. Lonzo, did you see the Jaden Daniels, as the Spanish broadcast team called it, Ave Maria?
No, I heard it when you played it on the air, though.
Oh, yeah. So have you seen it yet?
No.
Okay. It's worth the watch. It's worth the watch. And the reason it's worth the watch.
So I need to see two guys who I don't understand in the booth just to see their excitement?
No, I meant, have you actually seen the play? Have you actually seen the toss?
Yes.
Okay.
That's like probably 1,000
times. Yeah, I figured so. Yeah. I was a little shocked when you said you haven't seen the play.
Well, you made it sound like, have I seen those guys, Colin?
No, I haven't seen those guys.
You mentioned those guys before you.
But I've heard those guys and they're amazing. I've heard those guys and they're amazing. And for those of you that are asking, like Zach did in the chat on the stream just a minute ago. Yes, we are going to come to the Deontay Johnson trade here in just a few minutes. Because no, my panties are not in a twist about it. And it sucks, but like you should have seen the writing on the wall for this one.
So they're pristine. They're not twisted.
Unwrinkled, and I am unbothered
by the
metaphorical panties. That is correct. We're going to come to the Deontay trade here in a minute. Because you shouldn't be shocked or bothered by it. Okay? You just shouldn't. It shouldn't be. You should. Whatever. Okay, well, I'll tell you why in a minute. The Chicago Bears, we came into this year, and by we, I mean I, and by I mean all of us collectively, obviously, because we know ball. Came into this year with moderate expectations for the Chicago Bears. First couple of weeks, mildly disappointed in the initial performance of Caleb Williams, but as I told you then, and I told you going into the year, I think there is this false narrative that is created by a very small number of rookie quarterbacks, that rookie quarterbacks can show up and just like be dogs right out of the gate. That's not how it works. Most rookie quarterbacks are not dogs. Most rookie quarterbacks need some time to figure it out. Well, as the season progresses, if you are watching it, it is pretty easy to see that Caleb Williams is figuring it out week by week. It's taken some time, but for most rookie quarterbacks, it takes some time. So Caleb Williams going up against Jaden Daniels, who did play in this game this past weekend despite a rib injury. Jaden Daniels finds himself in a shootout situation with Caleb Williams. And both defenses are playing relatively well. It's a low-scoring game, undercashed by all the points. It was phenomenal. And then we line up on a drive with Washington in charge of the football, coming out from their 25 with inside of a minute left to play. And there is, and I will say this looking at it in retrospect, there is no reason for the Chicago Bears to have lost this football game. Now, I know most of you don't care about Chicago Bears football or Washington Commanders bum, 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 football. But this conversation isn't about the Bears or the Commanders. It's just about football. And stick with me. I'll tell you why. There's no reason that the Bears should have lost this football game. They lost this football game. As I said preseason, I thought they would lose most football games that they would lose this year because the coaching stinks. It just does. They were in a position to win this game, and the coaching fell apart. Well, wait a minute, Rob. The coaches weren't out there executing. No, I know. I am aware. But it's not just that. You were talking about a couple of things. Number one, on the quick out that stopped the clock to give Jaden Daniels and co. time to set up for, to run, to execute, and to succeed on the Ave Maria that they utilized to win the football game. What the Commanders were about to do was glaringly obvious. And Chicago had no answer for it. You knew what they were going to do. There were two options there. With enough time to get two plays off, they had two options. Number one, they take a Hail Mary shot at the end zone. Sorry, an Ave Maria shot at the end zone from 80 yards away, which doesn't make sense. Best case scenario, ball gets caught probably 20 yards shy of the end zone, and now they don't have the chance to get up there and clock it. It's going to be a miracle if they get the next snap off. Or number two, they can do what every person in the country who even has like a GED in the knowing of ball said they were going to do. They're going to run three guys on the fly, one guy towards each sideline. Jaden Daniels is going to be looking to the sidelines to see if he can find a guy that they can get the ball to, get him out of bounds, and reset with a shorter Ave Maria opportunity. And that's what they did. And Chicago had nobody out there. Nobody protecting the sideline. It was a bad play. And then you have the Ave Maria itself. And there's a lot of things we can talk about that went wrong on that. Number one, and I think this is the one that has drawn the most criticism, I got a defensive back. I don't know how many of you have seen this or not. I got a defensive back that is talking smack to the Commanders fans while the ball's in play. I'm not talking about while he's running back to play free safety on what is obviously an Ave Maria. I'm talking about Jaden Daniels is taking the snap. He's running around left to right, looking for room, trying to avoid defenders, setting up, giving his fly route receivers time to get down into the painted part of the football field. And I got a safety back there who is hopping and skipping around and talking junk to the fans. And then Lonzo and I have had this conversation a gazillion times in the multiple years we've been doing the show together. Lonzo, if you're a free safety and an Ave Maria gets launched into the end zone, what's the one thing that should be running through your mind?
Knock it down.
Knock it down! This is elementary school football. Literally, the first game that you learn how to play, or at least I did when I was a kid, when you learned how to throw and catch a football, where I was from, we called it 500. Told you this before. Game is simple. Quarterback, guy with the football, throws the ball way up in the air, and he yells out a number. 100, 200, 300, 400, or 500. Or he yells jackpot or bankrupt. And you throw the ball up in the air, and the goal is to catch a combination of footballs. They add up to 500 points. So, you know, you catch 100, and then you want to catch 300. Now you got 400. Now you got to catch another ball where the guy yells 100 to get you to 500, whatever. But along with that, obviously, is a situation where maybe if you have 300 and the quarterback yells 400, if you catch that ball, you're going to bust it over 500, go back to zero. But if he yells 400 and the guy next to you, you know he has 100, he catches it, he wins, what do? Knock it down. Jump in front of him, get a hand on it, and not tip it up. Because you know what happens if you tip it up? It can still be caught. Knock it down. And I got multiple Chicago defenders out there very clearly trying to stat pad and grab a pick. They end up alligator arming the football up into the air, and there's Noah Brown in the back of the end zone, tutty. Now, there's one more thing about this in an Ave Maria defense. They should always be one guy, who is in the back of the end zone on defense, and he has one job. Whatever receiver leaks out from behind the scrum, because there will be one, when a wide receiver leaks out from the back of the scrum looking for exactly what happened for Noah Brown, a pass being tipped up and backwards by the defense, you got to have somebody back there to knock that down, knock down the second chance. Chicago didn't have that either. The point that I'm making here is this was a loss that was 100% preventable, and it was 100% preventable by a well-coached, well-disciplined defense. What do we say the big problem is going to be for the Chicago Bears coming into this year? Poor coaching behind Matt Eberflus. That was it. That was it. I wasn't worried about Caleb Williams. In fact, Caleb Williams won me over in the offseason. I was not a Caleb Williams believer going into the draft, but I watched a heck of a lot, and this is a weird sentence to say, of Chicago Bears preseason football. And he won me over. He won me over in terms of character, won me over in terms of leadership, won me over in terms of arm strength, in terms of precision and understanding. I said, I don't think he's quite as good still as a lot of the draft experts are trying to pretend that he is. But he's pretty good. He won me over. Quarterback, not the issue. Wide receivers, running backs, whatever. I've already told you, I think Caleb Williams is in one of the best starting positions of any one number one overall draft picks in the history of the NFL. Honestly, I think that Caleb Williams was drafted into more of a beneficial position than any number one draft pick that I can remember at the quarterback position. Phenomenal position. They're great. Defensively, a lot of talent on the defensive side of the football for the Chicago Bears. A lot of talent. There is one thing I said coming into the season would hold this team back, and it is defense. It is coaching. The only thing that could hold this team back is coaching. And it was very evident that it's a poorly coached football team on that one play. That loss was completely unnecessary, but it ended up being that way because of that. And I want to talk a little bit about that. I got some sound bites from some different folks that have jumped in, including a couple of Hall of Famers that have analyzed what went wrong there. And I want to talk about the importance of having a good, solid, disciplined football team or baseball team. Am I right, LA Dodgers? We'll talk some World Series coming up later in the show and more. It is going to be a busy damn day today. We'll get to that Deontay Johnson trade coming up here in a minute on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
So yesterday, the Carolina Panthers send Deontay Johnson, a wide receiver they acquired during the offseason from the Pittsburgh Steelers, back up north to the Baltimore Ravens. And they do so, sending Deontay Johnson and a sixth round pick back to Baltimore in return for Baltimore's fifth round pick. And based on where these two teams are likely to finish in the draft order, right now, the Carolina Panthers are going to have a likely top three pick. They are also one of the betting favorites to end up with the number one overall selection. And based on what we are seeing and the fact that Deontay Johnson, the only true, although Xavier Leggett is starting to flower just a little bit, and perhaps Xavier Leggett can grow into that number one wide receiver. Deontay Johnson was the number one wide receiver. So now, whatever momentum you had started to grow with Bryce Young, now you go back to a situation where effectively Adam Thielen is once again your number one overall wide receiver. It's not going to go great for Carolina. When I say it, I mean it. They may not win another football game this year.
Yeah, we already thought that.
Yeah, I think there was still some hope, or at least the thought was there, and we'll ask Rashad Beard about this when he joins the show tomorrow. There was still some thought out there that, like, maybe they could still... By the way, I'm going to go to the Panther game on Sunday, I think.
Yeah, we know you're going.
I think I am going to go, but it's really more just to have something to do on a Sunday at this point.
Mm-hmm.
All right? I'll go. I'm going to talk trash because I find it amusing. I expect nothing. All right? But the Deontay
trade. You're really
trade,
going because this is might be one of the only victories left for the Saints.
That is also true. That is also correct. My team may, listen, both of our teams, Carolina fans, both of our teams may be drafting in the top five when this is all said and done. So, the Deontay trade, based on where the Panthers are going to finish, likely inside of the top five. And based on where the Baltimore Ravens finish, and I think a lot of people are walking away from the Ravens because they lost to the Browns. The AFC North, I think it is fair. So we've had this conversation when we've talked about Cincinnati-Cleveland, when we've talked about Pittsburgh-Cincinnati. That division, maybe more than any other division in football, that division is a throw the record books out the window division when teams get together. It just 12-win teams lose to 3-win teams all the time in that division. Never makes sense. A lot of people walking away from Baltimore because they lost to Cleveland with Jameis Winston as the starting quarterback. Well, as I have said a number of times, do not, ladies and gentlemen, do not overreact to one win on the back of a quarterback who is getting his first action of the year, because there's no tape on the guy. Teams are learning the guy as they go, especially when it's the first start for a quarterback under a new regime and a new game plan, because you never know how that quarterback is going to respond to that particular game plan. And I think Carolina Panther fans, better than anybody else, know the coordinator, the game plan a quarterback plays in can have a great influence on the success or failure of said quarterback. Am I right, Baker? Very clearly. So
I thought you were talking about Andy Dalton.
And Andy Dalton and Sam Darnold and a litany of other quarterbacks. So I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, see, Baltimore, very overrated. They lost to Cleveland. Yeah, they lost to Cleveland with a starting quarterback who's got some talent in him. We know that. Making his first start in the Stefanski regime. Don't overblow this. Baltimore still were good. No, by the way, Baltimore now has Deontay Johnson, a sideline receiver, which they did not have. The Baltimore Ravens have the third fewest outside the number receptions in the NFL right now. Now they got a sideline guy.
You're saying it wrong. It's Baltimore lost to Cleveland.
Okay, that's fair. I can't push back on that because they did. So Baltimore likely going to finish. Zoe, is it fair to say inside the last eight teams selecting in the NFL draft in 2025? I think inside the last eight. I'm not saying Super Bowl. I'm not saying AFC Championship. I'm saying they're drafting with the playoff teams this year.
More than likely, yeah. I mean, they make the playoffs just about every year,
yeah.
don't they?
Yeah. So drafting likely somewhere between, I would say, 25 and 32, and the Carolina Panthers drafting somewhere between 1 and 5. This could be a move of anywhere between up one pick. This may move them up one pick. If the Baltimore Ravens win the Super Bowl and the Carolina Panthers end up with the worst record in the NFL, both which are very realistic possibilities, this could move the Panthers up one pick. Realistically, this is going to move them up somewhere between like 3 and 8 picks maximum.
So this is not a fire sale because you can't have one in a place where you don't have a lot of pieces to get rid of. This is like, do they have any more moves that they can make to get more draft picks?
I mean, maybe you could trade Adam Thielen at this point, right? You could probably trade away Miles Sanders if you wanted to. But again, you also got to keep in mind, you're trading the contracts with them, and you're trying to do so in week 9 of the NFL season. There's not as much value as you'd like, but we'll see what matters to them. So this trade of Deontay Johnson is moving you up either somewhere between 1 pick and 8 picks. I don't think it's going to be much more than 8 picks because I don't think Baltimore's missing the playoffs and Carolina may not win another football game.
Is that admitting to a mistake, bringing him in, or do you think maybe he's a problem in the locker room?
Nope, neither of those things. It's neither of those things. It's the fact that Deontay Johnson's contract's up at the end of this year. While he has said that he is interested and willing to and actually preferred to stay in Carolina at the end of the year, you are going to have to pay Deontay Johnson top flight National Football League wide receiver money for a guy that, whether his fault or not, and I don't think that it is, for a guy that has not proven that he is worth that money. And granted, it may just be because he plays on a bleep football team right now. I don't know how many wide receivers, but could prove that they are a top flight wide receiver inside of this offense on this team right now. I will say one of the things that makes it, I think, more of a sensical move is that Xavier Leggett looks like he has taken leaps forward in the last, what's he got, 3 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks? I mean, he's finding pay dirt now, right? And Deontay Johnson is built to do, Xavier Leggett is built to do what Deontay Johnson does. So here were, I think, your options. You had 3 of them if you're Carolina when it came to Deontay Johnson. Option number 1, you do nothing with the guy, you get to the end of the year, and either he decides, no, this team sucks, I want out, or you decided it's not worth paying Deontay Johnson, and he walks away for nothing as a free agent. He just leaves. He just walks away for nothing. Option number 2 is you get to the end of the year and Deontay Johnson decides he wants to stay and the Carolina Panthers decide that they want him to stay, but now you have to pay him wide receiver 1 money, which is already going to be scarce next year because you're going to have a top flight rookie you got to take care of. You got a handful of other free agents, etc. You're going to have to bust out a significant part of your cap on a guy that, respectfully to Deontay, we don't know if he is a top flight receiver because whether he is or isn't, hard to do that in this offense. Or option number 3, which was you do what you did, which was you trade him for whatever the hell you can get. From what we understand, there were 2 maximum, including Baltimore, 3 teams that were interested in Deontay Johnson. So it wasn't like it was, like Amari Cooper, where there were 16 teams in the league that were willing to make a move for Amari Cooper. You had 3. And realistically speaking, based on the numbers and the performance, you really weren't going to be able to get much. So what you've done here is you have significantly decreased your cap. Not necessarily in terms of what Deontay Johnson was making this year. You decreased the cap based on what Deontay Johnson would have made next year if you re-signed him and you moved up 8 or 9 picks to get there. Is that a lot? No, it's not a lot. But you know what it does do? It potentially jumps you out front of teams like the Chiefs and the Bills and the 49ers and the Ravens. teams that have done great job drafting players in recent years, and it gives you the opportunity to maybe select a guy in the fifth round that maybe falls down the board that you really like, or a guy that you know the Chiefs have great interest in, and you go, well, if the Chiefs like him, like they did Xavier Worthy, maybe that's the right call, right? And you go get that guy. It presents some opportunities, and you decrease your cap space from not having to sign Miles Sanders to a wide receiver one contract. I know that it doesn't move the needle much. It shouldn't move the needle much. It's not exciting. But what I am saying is you shouldn't be depressed about it. Yeah, you lose Deontay Johnson for the rest of the year. Can I be honest with you? It's time to tank. You should punt this season.
Or just play like you're doing.
Or do nothing different at all and let it happen naturally, for sure. Hey, speaking of punting, that's what the Dodgers did last night. The Dodgers didn't lose this game because the Dodgers are a worse baseball team somehow in one night. They lost the game because they didn't try to win it. They didn't have any need to. And I'm absolutely okay with that. I'll tell you why when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. So this is very interesting. The New York Yankees get a win in the World Series. There's a breath in Brooklyn remaining. 11-4, your final last night. The question is this the LA Dodgers allowing the Yankees a little bit of life? The Yankees taking advantage of it. And it being a mistake by the Dodgers, or it being a calculated risk that makes sense for the LA Dodgers? And the answer is, I don't know that we'll know until tonight. I can venture a guess. I don't think it's going to matter. I think the Dodgers are too much better of a baseball team. Last night, the Dodgers threw, although they only used, four pitchers in that contest yesterday evening. Last night, the Dodgers effectively threw a bullpen game. They went with Kasparius up front, then they went to Hudson, Knack, and Honeywell. It was a bullpen game, is what it was, and nothing more. Here's the question you have for the LA Dodgers. In allowing the New York Yankees to have the most successful night that they have had at the dish in the World Series, they had 9 hits last night, 3 of them home runs. You had Gleyber Torres, who had a 3-run shot. Anthony Volpe hit a grand slam that kind of solidified the win for the Yankees. And you had a home run from Austin Wells, the catcher, as well. And that Wells home run was obviously at that point, hits it in the eighth inning, already felt like the game was over at that point. And I think it was. I think the Dodgers had decided late in that contest that they were going to punt this game. We're not worried about this game. We're not going to throw anybody at you. The reason they only used 4 pitchers in a bullpen game was because they wanted to keep their relievers and their closer /zers fresh for tonight's game. They want to put it away tonight. There was no sense last night, in my opinion. There was no sense last night, especially considering in order to win that game, obviously a must win with the Dodgers up against elimination, the Dodgers had to throw everybody last night that was worth a damn. Aside from Luis Gil, who had in a not great night, 4 innings, 5 hits, 4 runs all earned, just 1 strikeout, gave up a pair of clubs, including one to Freddie Freeman. They went with Holmes. They went with Hill. They went with Leiter. They went with Weaver. They went with all their best arms, and they had to go with all their best arms to keep themselves alive. And the Dodgers knew that. So the Dodgers said, you're going to go with all of your best arms. We're just going to go with some arms. We're just going to go with some guys that are on this roster. And we're going to go with some guys who are on this roster for one reason and one reason alone, so that all of the guys on this roster are available tomorrow night to put your asses away. And I'm honestly fine with that. I know there's a lot of people who do not believe in punting on a game. You're up 3-0. You've got to take one of four. So here's my question. Do you sprinkle your talent across a couple of games and hope that your offense is good enough to get you one of them? Or do you, and this is the belief I'm of, do you hang out? Do you allow the Yankees a Pyrrhic victory? A victory that while they walk away from the battlefield with a victory, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter, right? A Pyrrhic victory, a victory where one team wins the battle, but by winning that battle, it makes it more difficult to win the war. And I think that is the answer. But with that comes one big risk. And that big risk is, even though they know what you are doing, and what you are doing in that game was punting. We're going to throw the absolute bottom of our depth chart at you. And we don't care if you score 50 runs. The risk that comes with punting and allowing the Yankees to record a victory, Pyrrhic or not, in this situation is that you allow them to find something that they did not have after game three. Confidence. Confidence at the plate. This is a team whose best player, Aaron Judge, was 1-for-3 last night. I believe that that makes him now 2-for-15, 3-for-15. He did not strike out last night, which is nice. He still has 7 Ks through 4 games in this World Series. Not as bad as it was going into this game where he had 7 Ks through 3 games. That's a much worse look. Not that this is dramatically better. But I think the concern, the risk you run, is that you allow them to find some confidence. You allow them to go, oh, that's how we hit a baseball. I've had this conversation with Cody Decker, former Major League Baseball player and my co-host on Bet for the Cycle, every Saturday from noon to 4 on the BetQL Network. I've asked this question of him before. The concept of a slump, right? The concept of a slump where you have just lost your mojo. And he said, and we had this conversation last year. I don't even remember the player we were talking about, but we were talking about a specific player that a lot of us had an MVP vote bet on, who had kind of disappeared late in the season. And I said, what do you do to get out of a slump like this? And he said, you want to know what the best portrayal of a slump is, of a slump buster is? He said, it's Major League. He said, it's the Jobu scene from Major League. It's President Palmer in Major League. It's Pedro Serrano. He said, you know, you watch that movie and here's Pedro Serrano, who's a slugger, big time hitter, stud, can't touch the baseball. And he said, sometimes it's just a matter of something being different. It's something being different to allow you the mental trick of fooling yourself into believing everything's good now. It's getting out of your own head. And sometimes, even if you know that you are tricking yourself, it still works, right? With Pedro Serrano, it was looking at Jobu and saying, you, Jobu, I do it myself. One of the greatest scenes from one of the greatest baseball movies of all time. Here's the thing. What I worry about for the LA Dodgers, and that in going with the bullpen game last night, with throwing the back end of their rotation, guys that you likely will not see again in this series unless things go very sideways in game 5 or 6 of this series, by throwing these guys and having them go, like Kanak went 4 innings. That's more than he works. By throwing these guys and effectively saying, we don't care if you win by 20, we're going to keep our arms fresh so that we can get you in game 5. the situation that you have created here is that the Yankees went to bed last night going, we're back. We're back, you sons of you-know-whatsers. We're back. That's how we do it. That's how we play New York Yankee baseball. And in doing so, now the Yankees aren't just going to be able to do that against Kasparius and Hudson and Canak and Honeywell. Now they're going to be able to do it against the top of the rotation for the Dodgers. Now, all of the sudden, they're not going to be scared by the 1 and 2 guys because we're reset now. We are going back for game number 5 to the top of the rotation for the Dodgers. Jack Flaherty, who threw a gem in game 1 for the Dodgers, is back on the bump tonight against Gerrit Cole. Now, Gerrit Cole was throwing a gem too, 84 pitches. Remember, you go back to what I talked about in game 1. I said I think the Yankees, because they are not as good, they are a very good baseball team, but they're just not as talented consistently as the Dodgers, meaning that the pressure of winning the series is on Aaron Boone. It's on the players. They got to go execute and perform. They can't make mistakes. But the pressure is on Aaron Boone. He has to manage this series perfectly. He has to get every decision that he makes right. Every decision he gets wrong makes it that much more impossible for the Yankees to knock off a team that is, respectfully, just better than they are, right? They are the best team in the American League. The Dodgers are the best team in baseball. And so I go back to that Gerrit Cole performance in game 1. 84 pitches, dicing up the Dodgers, and Aaron Boone yanks him. And I get why you wanted to yank him. You wanted as much rest on that arm for game 5 as you could get. See, the problem was, first off, there was no guarantee there was a game 5. Although it looked likely because, again, bullpen games in the World Series ordinarily result in a loss if the other team can go 4 pitchers deep, and the Yankees did.
Everything you said this entire morning has made it sound like this game was thrown so they could get it to another game.
Not thrown. I think the Dodgers punted. I think the Dodgers said, we are not upset. If we win the game, great. But what we're not going to do is we're not going to find ourselves in the 5th inning in a 1-run game and throw out there our best middle reliever and our best closer, which makes them unavailable for game 5 on Wednesday night. We're not going to throw them out there to get into this batting contest when we know our ace has to come up. And by the way, because the Yankees are against elimination, they threw every great arm that they have last night, which means in tonight's game, the Dodgers have their ace and they have every reliever and every closer available to them. The Yankees have half of theirs.
So no chance that this is not a ploy by the powers that be to make sure that they get another game out of the series, which reportedly has some of the best ratings in a long time. I'm just saying, conspiracy wise, it just seems like, well, we just won't send our best out.
No, I think this is a management decision. I will say a couple
of
things.
Yeah, it would be a management decision.
No. Management, I'm talking in Dave Roberts, the manager of the Dodgers. This is a Dave Roberts decision. This is a strategical decision. This is a decision that he made to say, we're going to have the fresher bullpen and every position on Wednesday, and the Yankees are going to be exhausted. They threw the best they got yesterday off the bump. Their pitching staff is going to be exhausted when we play this one tonight.
Why not do that yesterday?
Because you would have put your best up against their best, and if you lose that battle, then you come into game 5 without your best against them without their best. Why not set up a scenario where I come into game 5 with a lineup that's hitting better than the Yankees were, at least up until last night, and again, they did it against the worst pitchers on my team. Now tonight, I got all my big guns. I got my best. I got my guys that can hurl bleep missiles at you, and you don't.
So I guess I don't understand about baseball. So a starter can't can't pitch 2 days in a row.
A starter's not going to pitch 2 days in a row. Middle relievers and closers can,
there's no rule to stop them from pitching 2 days in a row.
Correct, but you're never going to have a pitcher that goes out there and throws even more than 30 or 40 pitches who is going to have his best stuff the next night. That is why if you throw a middle reliever or a closer out there, this one, I've had this conversation many, many times where a guy will come out, like the best closer on a team will come out, pitch the ninth inning, and then the game ends up in extra innings, and that closer, who is the best you got, doesn't come back out for the 10th. People go, why isn't that guy out there for the 10th? Well, because if he only throws the ninth, he can come back out and pitch tomorrow and the day after that. But if you have him throw two or three innings, you've cooked him for 3 or 4 days and he's unavailable. You're taking a bomb out of the arsenal for the sake of a game instead of the benefit of three. Because here's the other part. If the Dodgers don't win tonight, if the Yankees take two in a row, and now we got a 3-2 series. Now it's a real series going back to L.A. for two more that the Dodgers got to have one. Not only have you lost that game, but now you've burned your best against their worst. And when you go back to L.A., we're back to ground zero in terms of what these rosters are. And that benefits the Yankees, not the Dodgers. This is a move that is not just about tonight's Game 5. It's about being as best prepped as you can for Game 6 and Game 7 as well. This is the right call from Dave Roberts.
All right, seems a little fishy to me. It's also amazing how a guy can take a play off and get benched, but in baseball, you know, you only have to work every other day if you're a pitcher, or like every 2 or 3 days.
I would bet you, great one, if you and I went out tomorrow, down to Burns, and we went out to the baseball diamond, and I had you throw 30 pitches, your arm's worthless for 3 days. Now, these guys are throwing the ball at 102 miles an hour. You're not touching 50. They're throwing 103.
Speaking of 50, I'm over 50 and highly arthritic. I mean, 5 pitches and I'm done.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not.
The point is, you thinking baseball pitchers are wusses says, and I say this respectfully, you don't know how arms in the Major League Baseball work.
I didn't say that you did.
They can't throw 2 days in a row without taking a break.
Again, there's that voice. I think there's a conspiracy. I think they just wanted another game. For the ratings. That's what I think.
I mean, that's wonderful. No, that's not how baseball works. Mm-hmm. This is the same strategy happens in the NLCS. It happens in the NLDS. It happens in the wild card if necessary. This is baseball 101. This is elementary level baseball. This was the right call from Dave Roberts. Not a conspiracy. It's a, how do we give ourselves the best position to win in Game 5? And the answer is keep our best fresh while they are exhausting theirs. It's just baseball strategy, and it's beautiful strategy from Dave Roberts. We'll talk more World Series later on in the show after Lonzo does this sports flash.
Also, the commissioner, you know, may have called and said, hey, we need at least one win in New York.
Let me go get you Chris's tinfoil cap.
All right. I helped him make it. The Indianapolis Colts have announced they're benching starter quarterback Anthony Richardson in favor of veteran Joe Flacco for this week's game against Minnesota. The benching comes after Richardson told reporters he checked out of a loss against Houston because he was tired. Richardson was 10 of 32 for 175 yards after starting 2 of 15 and has a season completion rate of 44.4%, the fifth worst in a player's first 6 games since 2000. Carolina Panthers have traded recently acquired wide receiver Deontay Johnson to the Baltimore Ravens, along with a 6th-round selection in return for Baltimore's 5th-round pick next year. Johnson joined Carolina from Pittsburgh during the offseason and now joins Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman in the Ravens' passing attack. Still probably won't win a playoff game. Tune in this Friday at 7 as the Burns Rebels head to Boyne Springs to take on the Bulldogs. It's Burns versus Boyne Springs right here on The Fan Upstate.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.